for the clash of punk rock, politics, and your uncensored, unafraid host, Remso W. Martinez. You are about to experience the Remso Republic.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another installment of our program. I'm your grateful host, as always, Remso W. Martinez. And you're listening to what I hope is your favorite podcast, the Remso Republic. This week in politics, as always, for the past, I want to say year, but let's just admit it, it's been crazy for a lot longer than a year. It's been absolutely insane. We had another third-party candidate jump in the race. Trump is just diving in the polls. Hillary is apologizing for her recent malfunction. I hope that whoever installed her current programming at Google knows to fix that. That could be a real problem. But what really worries me is this. I, contrary to popular belief, I do listen to shows outside of mine. That's a joke, folks. As I was driving back from a recent job I had in Lynchburg, Virginia, when I was driving back towards D.C., I was listening to the Buck Sexton show on the Blaze Radio Network. And he had this one guy from New York call in. And he was a strident, strong, and true Trump supporter. And the biggest thing that he wanted to push out was this. And the topic was talking about this new conservative candidate that was coming in as an independent in the race. He said, you know what? The establishment types, the Karl Roves, the Mitt Romneys, they need to understand this is our party now. He kept saying our party. It's the people's party now. He referred to many Republicans as Marie Antoinette Republicans, getting angry over Trump's etiquette. The gentleman said, oh, they don't like the way that he uses forks and stuff like that. And then he was like, you know, this is a moment where we're storming the Bastille. We're about to have a revolution. And he kept using these terms. And if you've been able to catch on to that point, the guy was saying, you know, Trump tells it how it is. It's about real people. It's about the working class, the blue-collar guys, the real Joes. And he's using a lot of terms that allude to the French Revolution. I don't know about your knowledge of history, but let me educate you on this one thing. The French Revolution did not end well. It did not end well at all for anybody. A bunch of people got their heads cut off. You know, the guillotine, the thing that they raise up with a rope and then they release and a blade chops your head off. A little added backstory, useless information, I know, but hang on. When the French soldiers stopped running out of just people to decapitate, they went over to Notre Dame and they took some of the statues of saints and priests and they began to decapitate those for fun. Does that give you kind of an insight into the French Revolution? Does that give you a little bit of an insight into what this gentleman is thinking? And he's not the only one that's spoken that way. But what's clever is now we're getting to see more into this, quote, populist. I call it just a bunch of angry people getting louder. This populist message. Because we're finally getting a little bit of an insight into what's going on with these people. Because the way they talk, the way they select certain words, everything is deliberate. And I think for a lot of these people that were never involved in politics before to finally start getting involved, it's odd that they all have the same unifying code words. But I'm actually not going to be the one to talk to you about that today. I actually want to go ahead and introduce our guest. It's Chloe Anagnos. She's the current media director for the Advocates for Self-Government, a nonpartisan, nonprofit educational organization. Chloe's work allows her to empower those who love liberty because highly successful ideas take work. And what she wants to do is she wants to go ahead and push the ideas of individual freedom and responsibility, along with that, free markets and peace to the world. She graduated from Ball State University in Munis, Indiana, with degrees in journalism and telecommunications. What her dual degrees have allowed her to do is report on a variety of topics in many forms of multimedia. She has been a contributing writer for outlets around the country on subjects such as economics, politics, religion, culture, and environmental science. Chloe, last I checked, wasn't environmental science something that belonged to the left? What are you doing getting involved in that?
Well, when it involves the Environmental Protection Agency, that's when I get involved. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's great to finally have you on.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
So, Chloe, as you kind of heard me bring up earlier, we have the one gentleman, and this is I've been hearing this in spatters and just every once in a while whenever I hear a Trump supporter call. And I listen to a little bit of Mark Levin, Sean Hannity. I listen to a lot of these more conservative radio stations because I have to think, what is the right thinking these days? Because it's not good enough for me to listen to other libertarian outlets and have them tell me what the right is thinking. I want the right to tell me directly. And if this one gentleman, he keeps bringing up a lot of these very French revolutionary terms. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I think, and this is going back to the French minor that I actually earned in college, completely useless.
What didn't you learn in college? I don't remember much. I'm still in it right now. Please continue.
Absolutely. But from what I understand, a lot of the problems that stemmed from the French Revolution actually had to do with taxation, and actually had to do with the French getting involved in the American Revolutionary War. Obviously, America and France have been very strong allies since the birth of our nation. And Marie Antoinette, her husband, the Sun King, just taxed as many people as possible. And obviously, as you and I'm sure a lot of your listeners would understand, you cannot tax your nation into prosperity. And I think that's something that we're kind of seeing right now in our own day and age when it comes to, you know, the national debt, when it comes to this $19 trillion and counting that our generation is going to have to end up paying back.
Yeah, and to just kind of continue on with this thing, because I think it's – I don't know of whether he was just a – I think the guy said he was in shipping or something like that. I'll try and post to the Buck Sexton episode in the show notes later after the episode premieres. But I think it's incredibly interesting that he kept bringing up the French Revolution as a way to describe Trump's rise. And I don't want to go ahead and call Trump the American Robespierre, but – you think of what Trump is bringing up. His big thing is America first. Mm-hmm. America first. We got to make America great again. The gentleman brought up, you know, this is a modern age storming of the Bastille. And it's interesting with this, because I remember this going back to the Tea Party resurgence in 2010. We had a conservative movement with both libertarians and these constitutionalists come together, and their idea was we're going to tackle the federal debt. That was the biggest thing. Then it led to Obamacare. Then it was the IRS scandals. And now, with Trump calling himself the Tea Party champion, the conservative champion, conservatives, they went ahead and supported somebody who's the very definition of the establishment. He put in a lot of the people that we've had problems with the Democrats. He sponsored and funded so many Democrats. He was for so many progressive socialist policies. And then on the drop of a dime, I'm a conservative.
Right.
And it's funny that he brings up the Bastille. They thought it was an armory. They were going to storm the Bastille and take all the weapons and attack the guards and the soldiers. It turned out to be a prison. They stormed it. All they did was release a whole bunch of prisoners. I mean, it's just... It seems that he thinks we're being fooled, but he's probably just fooled himself. I mean, with the language they're using, what's the biggest thing that you're picking up from these people?
To be really honest, I think a lot of it comes from ignorance, but I think a lot of it just comes from frustration. I think that when you look at a lot of people that call themselves conservatives, that identify with the Republican Party, these last 8 years have been very frustrating, and I completely understand. But at the end of the day, the problem is that I don't think many people really understand what it means to be conservative, and I don't think that they understand how to separate conservative ideology or political ideology from party association. And the thing that I always talk with other people about is that, you know, you can be a conservative and vote for Democrats or libertarians. You can be liberal and vote for vice versa. You know what I'm trying to say here? So
yeah.
It's just one of those things where I don't think a lot of people really kind of understand that separation. But I think the media plays a hand in that. I think whenever you see, you know, anyone on, you know, Fox News or MSNBC, just talking about Democratic, Republican, you know, that's all people really think that there is. And I think the Libertarian Party has done a lot, with branding and trying to get their guy out there this year, Gary Johnson. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Chloe, you talked about the media and a few of the paradigms that the American voters kind of trapped in. I won't go ahead and talk about that, but first we're going to go ahead and take a pause for a commercial break. Folks, you're listening to the Remsen Republic. Hang on tight. We'll be back in a moment.
By subscribing to the Rims of the Republic on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and YouTube. Don't be left out.
When did failure become sexy? When did repeating the same mistake over and over again sound smart? I'm Lucy Brenton, candidate for U.S. Senate, and like you, I'm worried about the future of our country. I've taught my children simple principles, which our government has forgotten. Live within your budget. Don't hurt people and don't take their stuff. We remember those simple kindergarten rules. Isn't it time our government does? To learn more, check out my website, lucyforsenate.com. That's lucyforsenate.com. Join me and make your vote count on November 8th. My name is Lucy Brenton, and I approve this message.
So people often ask me what podcasts I listen to, you know, when I'm not listening to old episodes of my own, that is. There are many great out there. There are some that are entertaining, funny, you learn from them, they just give you a great insight you're not going to hear anywhere else. But there's one show that really comes to mind when I think of where to get your starting ground and understanding what open minds and open markets mean. It's actually the show that I listened to when I first started learning about libertarianism. It's the Lions of Liberty podcast with its host, Mark Clare. Mark and his team do excellent things, from libertarians in a living room drinking liquor to Felony Fridays. They have a great list of just amazing interviews talking to the movers and shakers in the liberty movement. And let me tell you, if you want to get your friends who are a little apolitical, or they're a little liberal or a little conservative, but they like the ideas of liberty, Mark Clare will give it to you at the Lions of Liberty. So go ahead, check them out on Google Play, Stitcher, and iTunes today, and check it out for yourself. I guarantee you will not regret it.
Check it out today at www.lionsofliberty.com.
Curious. You work for the Advocates for Self-Government. It's a libertarian organization. You're trying to get people to break out of their left-right paradigm.
Right.
And I remember years ago when I was first getting into the libertarian circle, I took the Nolan test and I saw where I was. I was at the very top of the diamond that he had. And I'm just curious. For a while, we thought that we were seeing this great libertarian moment. We thought that people were understanding what individualism was, what free markets were, what limited government was. As an organizational representative, do you think that we've been good at trying to get this message out to people? Have we failed? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that it kind of comes in waves. I think that there are definitely more folks that understand individualism than others do. But also you have to think about the amount of young people that there are in this world. And I'm not going to ask how old you are, but I graduated
from
college. Oh, you're 21. Okay, wonderful. I'm 24. So we're about the same age. And when I was in college, I went to a school that had maybe 20,000 people there. And unfortunately, a lot of the things that were taught in a lot of my political science classes were left, right, left, right, left, right. And once I took my job that I currently have and really understood more about, you don't necessarily have to be a Democrat or a Republican or a liberal or conservative. You could be a libertarian. You could be a centrist. You could be an authoritarian. It wasn't really until I started looking at the world's smallest political quiz and studying a little bit more about libertarianism that I just kind of realized I felt like my college professors almost did me a disservice by not talking about more ideologies that there are out there. But again, I think that reflects back onto the media. What political parties get to debate on stage, you know, what other political parties have to really work hard for ballot access in the U.S. That would be the Green Party, the Libertarian Party. So I think that's kind of where we're at.
when I learned about libertarianism, I was a little bit intimidated by it because it was so different from everything I had learned. I remember in 2012, Robin Kerner, he was a writer at the Huffington Post, he started the phrase blue Republican. And it, and it was basically people who were traditionally Democrats, but they placed a lot more of an emphasis on civil liberties. And what he wanted to do is he wanted to get Democrats to vote and help Ron Paul win the election. And he stuck with that title ever since. And for a little bit, I'm like, well, you know, I'm a conservative, but I'm a lot more liberal than the Republicans, but I'm a lot more conservative than the Democrats. So am I a blue Republican? Am I a liberal Republican? Am I a conservative Democrat? I just didn't know. And you bring up the fact that there are so many other political ideologies out there. I mean, believe it or not, children, socialism was not born out of the Bernie Sanders campaign.
No, it was not.
Yeah. In terms of the media, what's the biggest role you think they play apart from just, you know, excluding people such as the Libertarians and the Green Party and all these other third parties that pop up out of nowhere? What are the ways that you think that they actually manipulate people's paradigms in a sense?
Ooh, so I have a good story for you. We were at the Libertarian National Convention. It was my first time ever going
to... Did you see a stripper?
I did. Okay, I did see that.
That way we won't have to bring it up again.
It was interesting to say the least. But it was a really exciting time. I think regardless of party affiliation, I think everyone should attend one national convention in their life just to experience that atmosphere. But at the conference center, hotel conference center that we were at, there was the national convention going on. There was, I think, a Comic-Con convention going on in another part of the complex. And then there was like a little kid's Irish step dancing competition going on way in another wing somewhere else. So you had all of these people roaming around, using the pool, using a lot of the same facilities. And at my booth, I had just cameras everywhere. I think MSNBC was there, Fox News was there, ABC, and a lot of them were going around interviewing everyone, regardless if they had a Libertarian delegate name tag or not. And they actually went up to, and I'll have to find the clip for you and send it to you later if I can find it. But they went up to people that were obviously there for the Comic-Con convention, dressed up as superheroes or whatever, and they started interviewing them about libertarianism because they just didn't know. And they manipulated the interview to make libertarians look stupid. And for being a media person, it was very disheartening to see someone do that. You can talk about ethics all you want in journalism. I feel like a lot of people don't have those anymore. But that was just really something that rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, and it's great that you bring that up. But another problem that I see, and I've seen this through the alternative right, that's what people are coining Trump's minions or brown shirts now, the alternative right. I've been blogging and I've been a part of alternative media since it started to really boom. And in terms of just internet share of influence, I think it relies heavily on the libertarians and heavily on the socialists. And it's really extreme because what you see in terms of internet activity isn't necessarily what you see in the rest of the world, especially our mainstream media. But do you think that alternative media is any better at that, or are they any worse? What are your thoughts about alternative media?
I really like alternative media. I had a conversation with a friend of mine that was at a summit for people that write for alternative websites and news sources and things like that. And she talked about how one of the panelists there used to be a big-time editor at a national newspaper that I won't name, but she was kind of trash-talking she was trash talking bloggers and was talking about how, oh, well, you know, the only real journalism, you know, comes from print and magazines and newspapers. And it's like, I'm sorry, but that industry is starting to die. I mean, you get on a subway, you get on a bus anywhere, everyone is on their tablet or on their smartphone reading countless different websites and sharing things through social media. And I really think that it is going to be, you know, something that exclusively, you know, if you and I have children later on, you know, our kids definitely would be those types of people that, you know, wouldn't be using newspapers or anything like that because it would all be on their tablets. You know, that generation is going to be the generation that is relying on alternative media.
Yeah. And that's great because what it does is it returns power to anybody. I mean, never in a million years, unless I was offered an opportunity like I was just randomly. I mean, I had never written anything publicly before. I was just offered a random opportunity, right, for an alternative media website. And that was great, but at the same time, that's really scary because, you know, with bloggers and, you know, I love bloggers. I've always been a blogger. With bloggers, here's my thing. For example, you've worked in that business. You have credibility. You know what is right and wrong. You know how to do things. You have worked your way up so that when you blog something, you come off as a subject matter expert on what you're talking about. You're not going to talk about things you don't know. With me
– Well, thank you.
You're welcome. With me, I mean, I was kind of all over the place. I really – because I knew that I didn't have much credibility of things, I just kind of regurgitated news. I just kind of put a libertarian slant on things to talk about the libertarian view of news. And as I got older, I got involved in campaigns. I got involved with think tanks. I got internships. I got jobs. I got other opportunities to talk to people. I don't talk about things I don't know about. I talk about things I'm an expert in. I think that when you compare me to a lot of other political bloggers, when I say something, I should have a little bit more substance behind it because I've been there. And with a lot of political bloggers, they don't have that. They're people that just listen to a little bit of talk radio. They're people that just watch the news. They're people that are interested in politics, and they've never done anything. And they just go out there and they can get it published and get a whole slew of people to read it. And I think that's a little bit destructive because we, as just a regular reader, I'm just going to go ahead and read it and believe that's because it's online, because it looks professional. It was done by a professional. No one ever looks at the authors anymore. No one looks at the authors' blocks and say, how does this guy actually know what he's talking about?
Right.
That's my biggest problem with alternative media, because as freeing and as game-changing as it is, that scares me. Does that scare you at all?
It does to a certain extent, but I also have faith that the more credible blogging sites that you and I have written for in the past would have editors or would have people in charge that would vet their writers. And that would make sure that they turn out to be credible people. And I always tell people when they're first starting out writing, whether that be, I mean, for fun or for a blog or for more established newspapers or magazines, that you need to be able to write about what you're willing to research. You don't necessarily have to write about what you already know. It's about what you're willing to learn. And I also use an example that I'm trying to think, and his name's escaping my mind. I think it was the editor of the New York Times when Watergate happened in the 70s. But he had a really interesting documentary talking about how he had a woman on his staff that completely fabricated a story, just fabricated it. It got printed. He ended up taking a lot of flack for it. And I mean, that was back in the day when you couldn't really, you know, do your research and, you know, get on Google and, you know, make sure that people are credible. But I think you're always going to have those slips in the crack. I think you're always going to have those writers that will get something out there that may not be true. But I have faith that there are going to be good people out there that can edit and that can do credibility checks on their writers.
All right, folks, we're going to take one more commercial break. Hang on tight. You're listening to the Remzo Republic. We'll be back in a moment.
Remzo in the mix.
Remzo.
What's our problem with messaging the ideas of liberty? Is it the ideas? Is it the people? Maybe it's both. Maybe it's the fact that we're just not doing it in a smart type of way. This is where the Libertarian Youth Caucus comes in. The Libertarian Youth Caucus represents the millennial wing of the Libertarian Party. They're trying to expand the party base while finding new ways to communicate simple, timeless principles such as open minds and free markets. What we need to know is how to find the next generation of voters and make them vote for liberty. We can have a smaller government and a freer economy in our lifetime. And I believe that if we want to help invest in the Libertarian Party, the best way to do so is with the Libertarian Youth Caucus. Learn more about them today at lyc.silkstart.com. That's lyc.silkstart.com.
This message is approved by the Libertarian Youth Caucus.
For years, the Republican and Democrat parties have used social issues and crises to keep us at odds with one another. They've divided us into groups and pit each group against the other, while those in government have together collaborated to strip us of our liberty little by little. In 2009, I decided to do something about it, and the Rupert for Senate campaign was born. Government of, by, and for the people requires our participation, not as voters, but as leaders and decision makers. But the parties have made it all but impossible for real, ordinary Americans to do so. So this average American has, since 2009, worked to give the voters, at least of Ohio, a choice outside the parties. The message is simple. The Constitution protects every American equally, but it's powerless to protect itself. That's our job, and it's time we take it seriously. You can learn more about my campaign at scottrupert.com. I'm Scott Rupert, independent candidate for Ohio's U.S. Senate, and I approve of this message.
Keep it spread so I'm not just hearing from one particular place, because everyone, folks, don't misinterpret this. Everyone has a bias, and I'd rather go to a source where they are explicit and let me know what their bias is than me having to question it. So I have a very small number of places that I get my media from, where I get my commentary from, because at least I know that they're consistent, they are quality, stuff like that. So, Chloe, what are some new sources that you consider credible? Where do you get your media from?
The majority of the things that I read are from the Foundation for Economic Education.
Oh, they're outstanding.
I love FEE. I've had the opportunity to meet Jeffrey Tucker a few times. He's one of their main content creators and writers. And anything from him is absolutely amazing. And then I also really love Reason Magazine. I get that religiously. I have notifications on my laptop anytime something new is published on their website. And I hate to say it, but those are really the two sources that I check religiously. Mm-hmm. And then also, whenever I'm writing or I need to fact check something, the source that comes from the government is going to be your best bet for, and I'm doing like air quotes right now, for true and accurate information. So whenever you're looking at studies, this is for, you know, anyone that's listening that might be interested in blogging or writing, that's always the best source to hyperlink back to. So I do read quite a bit from the Environmental Protection Agency. I just like to go to different government websites to see if I can find new content to write about, and to just kind of see what's happening in those different departments as reports come out.
Okay, good. And for myself, folks, for my conservative news, I usually go to the Blaze for most of that information. I think that Eric Erickson over at The Resurgent is good. For my liberal news, I read a little bit of the Huffington Post. They have some pretty good content that other news sources don't cover. And then for my libertarian media, I don't necessarily have a specific libertarian site. I know Chloe just listed off FEE and Reason Magazine. Those are obvious ones. But a couple of libertarian bloggers and writers I follow. I follow Lena Bryce at the Libertarian Republic, along with Keith Farrell. Anything Keith Farrell writes is just phenomenal. The guy's an expert blogger in terms of that. So that's a little bit from myself. But to kind of close things up, Chloe, we've talked about the bad baggage that comes with the mainstream media, and we've talked a little bit about the pros and cons of alternative media. Sure. We're coming into a brand new world. Technology is changing. The way we talk is changing. Most people get their news from Facebook and Twitter instead of a traditional media site. Do you think this new spread of information is going to be better for society, or do you think we're dumbing ourselves down? Are you more pessimistic or optimistic about the future?
I like to think that I'm more optimistic about the future, but I still have friends on Facebook that share those really stupid things like, oh, today only you have to copy and paste this into your status or Facebook is going to start selling your profile information.
I may have been guilty of that on more than one occasion.
I mean, it happens. I get it. I've been there, done that in like 2008. But I also think that there are people out there that can differentiate between credible news sources, and that can kind of pick and choose and understand what's real and what's not. I know that society is getting smarter. I think I read a study or some article, I read so much, that said something that we have probably the smartest generation of people in this moment in time.
You just reminded me of something. I'm going to bring up after this. I'm sorry, please continue.
Yeah. Oh no, you're totally fine. But I again just have good faith that as we start to shift more to online media, we're going to have those people that are going to be fact checking and that are going to be smart enough to know what's a true story and what's just being published in the Onion.
Speaking of Onion related places, as a journalist, uncensored, speaking from the heart, Matt Drudge, is he going to be relevant after 2016?
Oh, dear.
I've just opened up like the Pandora's box of everything, because whether it's mainstream media, alternative media, whether it's credible or uncredible or incredible or whatever, Matt Drudge is like the eye of the hurricane. And if I didn't bring him up, I'd be doing a disservice to everyone. So the Drudge Report, Matt Drudge, I'm just curious, what's your opinion of that right now?
To be the most frank, honest, I think anytime you have someone that goes out and really just writes with that much of a slant, I think they're always going to have an audience no matter what. It doesn't matter if it's Matt Drudge. It doesn't matter if it's, Rachel Maddow over at MSNBC. I think that those people are always going to have their audience. It's kind of the same with like the Kardashians. Why are they still relevant? Oh, because people actually care what they're doing. You know, they're always going to have that small type of following. So who knows? I mean, you could compare him to Trump in a way. Probably a year ago, a lot of people thought, oh gosh, he's got no shot. Why does anyone pay attention to him? And I mean, look where we are now, a year later. He's the Republican nominee for president.
It's
know
like
what I'm
American
saying?
Nightmare.
Right. Yeah, very, very much so.
So, Chloe, if people want to follow your work, read your blogs, keep up with everything you're doing projects wise, how can they do so?
Sure. They can visit my website. It's called www.aprettysmartgirl.com. And there I share all of the little tidbits and articles that I write, not only for the Advocates for Self-Government, but for the Tax Revolution Institute and for We Are Libertarians. I'm a contributing writer for those organizations. They can find me on Facebook. My page is it's my name, Chloe Anagnos. But then the like little at symbol, if that's like a thing on Facebook, is A Pretty Smart Girl Blog. And my last name's kind of hard to pronounce and spell, so I figured that naming it A Pretty Smart Girl Blog would be easier for folks out there. And they can find me the same, Chloe Anagnos, on Twitter.
Perfect. Chloe, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Learned a lot. Had a blast. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it and look forward to collaborating with you in the future.
Definitely. So, folks, in terms of alternative media, mainstream media, what's one source you can always go to? Especially if you want to listen to this podcast, go ahead and check out my website. It's rwmartinez.liberty.me. If you want to listen to the show on any platform, as soon as you hit the homepage, just click on the podcast tab. And you could find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, TuneIn, YouTube. We're everywhere. Definitely subscribe. And if you want to actually see how you affect the show, leave us a rating and review on any of those platforms. Let people know what you think. Contrary to popular belief, I manage all my own social media. So anything you want to say, I'll see it. We've already had people let me know what they like about the show, what they don't like about the show. Get involved. As always, I'm Remso W. Martinez. Screw the FCC. Good night, America.
Stay connected to Liberty's Rabble Rouser on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with the latest episodes, blogs, and other available content. What are you waiting for?